Today's shiur, Maseches Sanhedrin Daf Mem Tes. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. In our previous shiur, we saw the story of Yoav being pursued by Shlomo Melech and eventually being executed. The Gemara on Mem Tes will provide further background to the Yoav story. One would gain maximum benefit from this particular sukkah if one familiarizes himself with the psukim that are cited along the daf, and more than the specific psukim, but learning the entire story involving Yoav and his experiences with David HaMelech and eventually with Shlomo HaMelech. In the absence of actually having delved in the psukim, we will go through the Gemara in the hopes of gaining at least a simple understanding of the flow of the Gemara. Shlomo HaMelech is prosecuting Yoav for having committed a couple of murders. And what we've done with our markings, we've highlighted with a double underlining the opening of two cases that are Yoav is confronted with. The number one, you can see on the second line from the top, "My taimo katlisei le'avner." Why is it that you killed Avner? Avner was a general in the army of Shaul HaMelech, and eventually when David HaMelech took over the kingdom, Yoav killed Avner. The other individual that he's going to be called into question concerning is number two. You can see on the last narrow line of the Gemara, and number two appears in the little space between the Gemara and the Rashi. "My taimo katlase la'amosa." Why did you kill Amosa? Now we turn to the Gemara itself. First line at the end of the first line on Daf Memtes, Asyuha Yoav. Yoav was brought to the king for prosecution. Dine, and he was judged. Omar le, "My taimo katlase li'avner." Why did you kill Avner? Omar lehu, "Goyel hadom da soil havoi." I was the avenger of the blood of Asoil. In other words, Avner killed Asoil. And the Torah provides for the closest of relatives of the victim to avenge their relative's blood. So as such, I was out to get Avner, who murdered Asoil. Question. Asoil wasn't the mere victim of a murder, but rather Asoil roidef have. Asoil was a pursuer of Avner. He was threatening Avner, and therefore Avner killed him beheter. He was allowed to kill him. Hence, you have no right to touch him. You have no right to have touched him. Omar lehu, Yoav says back, it may be true that Avner was pursuing Asoil, but Asoil, it may be true that Asoil was pursuing Avner. That doesn't give license to Avner to have killed Asoil. Hoya loy lahatsiloy be'echod me'evorov. Avner could have saved himself, even though he was being pursued by Asoil. He could have saved himself by knocking out one of Asoil's limbs. And the fact that he didn't do that, but he murdered him entirely, he killed him completely, and not just knock off a limb, this was an act done in the Isur. Hence, Avner is considered hence this was an incorrect murder to have taken place. Hence, Avner had no right to kill Asoel. Omru lei, so he said back, lo yochel lei. Avner couldn't do it. He couldn't. He didn't have the skills, let's say, to knock out a petir limb. He was being pursued, and in self-defense, he simply killed the pursuer. Omar lei, Yoav says back, Avner was a murderer. Avner was very skilled, and he could have knocked out my relative's limb. Hashta b'doifen chamishes kiven lei, skipping the brackets, be'echod me'evorav lo yochel lei. We know that Avner was a very skilled marksman, and that's what's described in the bracketed section. So, being that he was a very skilled marksman, he could have easily knocked off one of Asoel's limbs. He had no right to murder him. That's Yoav's argument, and hence, since Avner, in fact. Murdered Asoel, even though he was being pursued, nevertheless, that makes Avner a murderer, and that gives Yoav the right to kill Avner as a Goyal Hadam. The term that was used above, Doifen Chamishis, we'll use a loose explanation here without getting into the details of anatomy. This was a spot on the body, let's say between the near the fifth rib, and Avner aimed his sword to or aimed his spear at that critical point in the anatomy, and was able to kill him by a very perfect aim. Hence, someone with that level of precision could have easily simply knocked off a limb. Let's read the bracketed section. Dichtiv, Vayakeu Avner v'achrei hachanis el achoimesh. Avner killed him with his spear el hachomesh. Remember Rabbi Yochanan b'doifen chamishis at the fifth rib. B'mokum shemora v'koved tluyim bo, a part, a position in the body that these two vital these two organs are located, the mora and the koved, and by piercing him at exactly at that point, he was able to kill him. So, if Avner had those skills, be'echod me'evorav lo yochelei, knocking out another, let's say, non-vital limb, he couldn't have done. Of course, he could have done it. So, why did he kill him? Hello. So, rather, we have to conclude that Avner was a murderer. Omar lei. So, Shlomo says, Nezel Avner. You know what? Forget the case of Avner. Namely, you regarding the murder of Avner, will say you're innocent. Rashi says that on the fourth line from the top. He says, "Omar le nezel Avner dino shel Avner poter ato olov." You're exempt concerning that. However, I have another question. My time of katlas le lamosa. Why did you kill him? Omar lehu hamosa murid b'malchus havei dechtiv. He was a murid b'malchus. He rebelled against the kingdom, and as a result of that, he deserves to be killed, and that's illustrated in the following pasuk: Vayomer Hamelach el Amasa. The king ordered Amasa, Hazek li es ishu the shloshes yomim, gather for me an army of troops from Yehuda over 3 days. Vayelach Amasa lahazik es Yehuda, and Amasa went to gather together these troops. Vayocher min hamoid asher yado. And he was delayed. So we see from the fact that he tarried, he didn't carry out the mission that he was ordered to carry out, that makes him a moreid b'malchus. Amale, so Shlomo responds to Yoav's claim. He says, Amosa, as far as Amosa is concerned, true he was delayed, but he was delayed legitimately. Achin v'rakin dorash. These expressions, ach and varakin, are simply the plural of the words ach and rak. These are words that are found in many different parts of the Torah that are of a limiting nature. They serve as a mute, and we'll see what that means momentarily. Am also went to gather these troops. Ashkechinu de psiach lehu b'mesechta. He found the men were seated in learning. They were studying Torah. Omar, Am also figured. Ksiv. The pasuk says in Yehoshua, "Kol ish asher yamra es picha v'lo yishma es dvarecha L'chol asher tetzavenu yumas, that anyone who rebels against you, you being the legal authority, the kingly authority, anyone who rebels and doesn't cooperate is to be executed. Yochal afilu ledivrei Torah. Does this apply even if their lack of listening to you is a function of their being involved with Torah? Talmud lomar rak chazak ve'emotz. It says in the same context in Sefer Yoshua, it says the word rak chazak. That means this indicates a limitation, that one of course is expected to listen to the king under most circumstances, but not under all circumstances. And those circumstances that are excluded happen to be cases where they're involved with Torah study. Elo hahu gavra mori b'malchus havi. Rather, the king says, Amosa is not the Mori B'Machos, you are, you, Yoav. Dechtiv, the Pasuk says, Vashmu bo ad Yoav. The word came to Yoav. Ki Yoav nota acharei Adonia, v'acharei Avshalom lo nota. The Gemara will elaborate on this. This Shmua that's referred to in the pasuk, that word came to Yoav. Rashi mentions Kishinimshach Shlomo bo el Yoav v'nisyore, a word that Shlomo HaMelech was anointed as king came to Yoav and he became fear struck. With a little bit of background concerning the end of the life of David HaMelech, toward his later years, his son Avshalom rebelled, and it was eventually an unsuccessful rebellion, resulting in Avshalom's death. And then at the very end of David HaMelech's life, another son of his, Adoniah, also tried to usurp the monarchy, and that too failed. And instead of Adoniah, Shlomo, another son of David, he became the king. The question is, as far as this pasuk is concerned, why is it mentioned here that Yoav himself ended up following Adoniah, but the pasuk mentions he didn't follow previously the Avshalom rebellion. My loy nota. Why is it necessary to mention that point over here? So, in order to deal with this, before we go on, let us take a look at our mivne, our structural note, because we're about to encounter a new geometric form, a house marking, a house form, also accompanied by Roman numeral 1 and a flipped over house form a few lines later, Roman numeral 2. The note says, Shnei gishois hafuchois legabi hayachasim bein David leYoav. Two opposite approaches regarding the relationship between David and Yoav. The first approach presents a negative relationship, certainly one that occurred later in David's life. Omar Rav Yehuda, the purpose of saying in the pasuk lo nata, Rav Yehuda says, it means shebikesh lintois velo nata. He actually had in mind to go with Avshalom. He was already planning to be part of a rebellion, but he simply didn't act on it. Umay taima lo nata. So why did he not follow the earlier Avshalom rebellion? So to this we have a couple answers. Number one, Omar Rabbi Lozer says, Adayin lichluchis shel David kayemes. David's lichluchis literally means his dampness or his freshness. We can say his strength was still around. He still had some years to go of power, so he didn't want to endanger himself by leaving the power center. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Hanina Omar, he has another approach to this, and he says that at the time of Avshalom, Adayin itstagnine shel David kayomin, call them the tough guys of David, were still around. The Rashi describes these Iksadina David as people that offered counsel to David regarding military matters. But the Gemara describes them as tough guys coming up right now. The Yomar of Yudah Marav, Arba Meos Yelodim Hoyu Lo LeDavid. David had in his troops 400 youth. Kulan b'nei yifas toyar hoyu. They were all the sons of women who were captured from the surrounding nations in battle, And those women, having been captured and then married by Jewish men, these women produced these 400 youth. And they were umegadli bloiris hayu. They had a type of hair fashioning, hairdo, that was similar to the Gentiles. The umehalchin beroshe hagaisis hayu. They also were, they led the troops into battle. They were at the forefront of the armed forces. The hein bale egroifin shel David. They were David's tough men. They went into battle, and when the enemy would see these guys, they would be fear struck. So Yoav didn't want to get entangled with these guys. So hence, and that was, they were around still at the time of the Avshalom rebellion. Upligo de Rabbi Abba bar Kahana. This approach that we've taken just now with regard to Yoav is at odds with the approach that Rabbi Abba bar Kahana presents. Dama Rabbi Abba bar Kahana, Ilmole David lo also Yoav milchama. Vilmole Yoav lo osak David b'Torah. If not for David, David and his Torah study and Torah rulings, Yoav would not have been able to been successful in his battles, Yoav being a very successful military man. And if not for Yoav and his successes in battle and warding off the invading forces, so lo osak David, but David HaMelech would not have been able to engage in the extensive Torah study that he did. Dichtiv, vayhi David oisem mishpat utzdaka l'chol amoi, vayoyav ben Tzruya al hatzava. Pasuk says that David practiced judgment and righteousness and charity with all of his nation, and Yoav was the head of the army. And the Gemara explains, matam David osa mishpat utzdaka l'chol amo. What is the reason that David was able to practice justice and charity with his people? And of course, the practice of justice can only be as a result of extensive Torah learning. Without the Torah knowledge, one can't practice the necessary justice. So why was David able to do that? Mishum diyoyav alatzava, because of what it says at the end of the pasuk, Yoav was in charge of the armies. Uma tam yoyav alatzava, and why was it that Yoav was successful as a military general? Mishum de David oisa mishpat utzdaka l'chol amoi. Because David was practicing Torah law with all of the people. A very important lesson is to be learned from this, that military success is integrally related with Torah success. Vayetze Yoav me'im David, vayishlach malochim acharei Avner, vayashivu oisoi mibor hasira. Yoav departed from David, the pasuk says, and the messengers sent after Avner and brought him from Bor Hasira. My Bor Hasira. The explanation of this pasuk will become clearer as we go on in the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Abba bar Kahana, Bor Usira Gormu Loi LaAvner SheYehoreg. We mentioned above in the Gemara that Yoav eventually killed Avner. And the question that the Gemara is confounded with right here, why is it that Avner was murdered? What caused him to be killed? So Bor, according to Rashi, is a reference to a flask of water. And Sira is a reference to a thorn. But this refers to a story that took place during the time of Shaul HaMelech. Avner, as we mentioned earlier, was a general in Shaul's army. And Rashi tells the story where Shaul was encamped, and as is pretty well known, Shaul was in hot pursuit of David. Shaul wanted to kill David. David found Shaul encamped and swiped away a flask of water while Shaul was sleeping. And when David revealed this, and he said, you know, David said, I could have killed you, and I could have killed Shaul, and nevertheless spared him, Avner at that point should have chastised Shaul and said, look, you're in pursuit of this man that has compassion on you, and you shouldn't pursue him anymore. But rather, Avner blew the opportunity and said, you know, the flask that David has, who says that he swiped it away from you while you were sleeping? Someone of one of the troops gave it to him. In other words, David was never really in the position to have mercy on you in the first place. And another incident took place when Shaul went into a cave to relieve himself, and in fact he went into a cave that David was hiding in. David snipped off a piece of clothing, part of Shaul's cloak, unbeknownst to Shaul, and then later showed him that, here, I have this piece of material from your garments. I could have killed you, and nevertheless, I spared you. At that point, Avner, once again, should have been Malamit Zchus, should have defended David and say, look how much mercy he has toward you. And yet, he didn't do that. He didn't rise to the occasion. And rather, Avner explained away the fact that David had a piece of Shaul's clothing in that the clothing got torn on a thorn and David simply found it there. So, being that Avner could have served to defend David and did not, he himself was killed. As we continue in the Gemara, there's a pasuk that we wrote in a couple words as a lead-in. Vayoshev Avner Chevron, Vayatehu Yov El Toch Hashar, Ledaber Ito Basheli. Avner went to Chevron, and Yoav met up with him in the gate. And it says, to speak with him, Basheli. What does this mean? We'll see that as we go on in the Gemara. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Shedono Din Sanhedri. The Shar featured in the Pasuk is the gate of a city. That was the place that the courts were located. And so for our purposes, it means that Yoav judged him as a court would judge him. Omale, Yoav says, my time akase the Asoil. Like we saw on the upper part of the page, Yoav here confronts Avner, why did you kill Asoil? So Avner says in his own defense, I killed him because I saw Rodefoy. He was pursuing me. Question, Hoya L'chol Atzil B'achas Me'evorov, why did you murder him? You could have knocked off one of his limbs and thereby stopped him from his pursuit of you. So Avner says back, Lo Yachilile, I couldn't do it. I wasn't able to. So Yoav says back, Hashta B'doifan Chamishas Kivnasle, you killed him by aiming your weapon at his fifth rib. At such a precise skills in murder, and in order to knock off one of his limbs, you couldn't have done it. Of course, you could have done it. So why'd you kill him? So as far as Yoav is concerned, Avner is a murderer. The pasuk also said, "Vadaber ito basheli." You'll notice with the little arrows that are found to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, you can find a previous arrow pointing to that posuk. Ledaber ito bashel. What is that? Omer v'yudo marav. Al iske shelo. Matters concerning a shoe. Let us take a look at Rashi. Al iske shelo. How does the word shelo come to mean shoe? So Rashi explains, Loshem Shal Na'olecha, from the pasuk where Moshe Rabbeinu met the burning bush. Kodesh Baruch Hu said to him, remove your shoes. So we see the word Shal associated with Na'olecha. Now, getting back to the Yoav Avner encounter, Sho'al Lo Be'ormo. Yoav asked Avner in a tricky fashion. He had a scheme, and he asked him, Yevoma Gidemes, a Yevoma, this is a widow whose husband died without children, without leaving children. She is to marry his surviving brother. In the event that she doesn't want to marry him, she goes through the chalitza process, whereby she would remove the surviving brother's shoe. Let us say the Yevoma is missing and she doesn't have arms. She's a Gidemes. So the question is, Yevoma Gidemes, Hecholetzes, if she's missing arms, how does she remove the shoe from her brother-in-law? So Avner, in response to that, Hischil Shoche Milifonov, he bends over, Umareu Kachi Choletzes Bishinau. He tried to demonstrate how she would remove the brother-in-law's shoe with her teeth. So for our purposes, we see Avner is in a bent over position. V'hu shalach harbo, Yoav drew his sword, v'horago, and murdered him right at that point, aiming his sword, as we saw before, to the area known as doifen chamishis, a perfect aim, cutting critical organs. Turning back to the Gemara, Vayakehu shom el achoimesh. This we saw above. Omar Rabbi Yochanan bedoifen chamishis, at the fifth rib. Mokom shemora v'koved tluyin bo, a place in the body that, at least in a bent over position, it would seem from the particular storyline, where you would be, where he would be able to cut these critical organs, the mora and the place where the mora and koved are attached. V'heshiv Hashem es domoi al roshoi asher poga b'shnei anoshim tzadikim v'toivim mimenu. And Hashem eventually took a vengeance on Yoav in that he killed two more righteous men than he. There was a double expression over here, tzadikim and toivim, which we've dashed on the line. The Gemara now explains. Toivim shehoyu dorshim achim v'rakim v'hu lo dorash. Tovim is a reference to the Amosa and Avner. These are the people that Yoav killed, in that they knew how to darshan, they knew how to read psukim in the Torah with their limitations, and he did not dorish them. He didn't dorish that. The Rashi reveals the background to this, so let us look at the Rashi. Shehem dorshu achim v'rakin, shelo l'kayim mitzvos ha'melech lavor divrei Torah. By darshaning, by expounding on these words, they knew that they're not to listen to the king's commands, which would have resulted in a Torah violation. Amosa Kedamon, we saw the story before involving Amosa, who was sent to gather together troops, but he found them studying Torah, and that's what caused his delay. Avner, kishomer lo shol avodav, Avner, when he was instructed by Shaul, Sovu v'himisu es koyanei Hashem, Shaul was trying to take vengeance and see to it that the a city of Koyhanim were to be killed. Uksiv lo avu avde Shaul l'shloch yadam v'lefgoa. It says that the Shaul's men did not want to kill them. And this is a function of Avner understanding that not all king's commands are listened to, when, especially those that are involved with violations of Torah. Or I should say, specifically those that are involved with violations of Torah. And that's a function of darshaning the limitation words in the Torah. V'hu lo hoya doresh. Yoav, on the other hand, didn't follow the proper way of analyzing psukim. V'horag Uriah b'mitzvaso shel David, afagav shelo tziva David ela b'igeres, and he didn't darshan this, and he saw to it that Uriah was murdered through the command of David, even though David didn't even say it to him straight, but rather sent it to him in a letter, kidichtiv, v'yuchtoiv b'sefer lemor hovu es Uriah. Turning back to the Gemara, Gemara goes on mentioning a point we just saw in the Rashi, tzadikim, shehein bepeh, v'lo asu, the reference to Amos and Avner, that they received orders straight, oral orders from the king, and they nevertheless did not listen to him. The who, Yoav, the orders he received were beigeres, were not direct oral orders. They were in a written message, and also, and he listened to those, to that particular command, which from this Gemara it seems he should not have done. The Amoso lo nishmar b'cherev asher biyad Yoav. Amoso, who we saw above, was killed by Yoav. Amoso was not attentive to the sword in Yoav's hands. Omarav shelo choshdo. He never even suspected. Amoso never even suspected Yoav as intent on killing him. The pasuk now describes Yoav. It says vayikover beveso b'midbar. The translation would be that Yoav was buried in his house in the desert. Otu beso midbar hu, was his house a desert? Omar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, kim midbar, his house was like a desert. In what sense? Ma midbar mufkar lakoil, just like a desert is an unowned and open area where anyone can roam. Af beisoy shel Yoav mufkar lakol. So too, the house of Yoav, his house, his possessions were available to all. He was a very generous individual, enabling the impoverished to derive sustenance from his possessions. Dover Achir, Kemidbor, another analogy to the Midbor is Ma Midbor Menuka Migezel V'Arayas, just like the Midbor is an empty place, being free of theft and immorality. Af Beiso Shel Yoav Menuka Migezel V'Arayas, so too the house of Yoav was free of theft and immorality. V'Yoav Yichaye Es Shar Ha'ir. The pasuk says that Yoav sustained the rest of the city. Amar Rav Yehuda, afilu munini v'tzachanta to'im poras luhu. These are different food items. Rashi says munini are small fish, and tzachanta is a type of other small fish that Yoav would taste from them and then send the rest to the poor of the city. So the Gemara, this particular perek, concludes with a rather complimentary version or approach to Yoav. We now turn to Amud Beis and the beginning of the seventh perek of Sanhedrin. The Mishnah features a machlokas tanoim concerning the order of severity of different court of the four different court executions. The level of severity of the execution is a reflection on the level of sin that led up to this particular punishment. Arba misos nimsru lebeisdin: skila, srefa, hereg, being killed by the sword, vechenek, and strangulation. Rabbi Shimon Omer, in our markings, we are continuing a numbering system, but the numberings here correspond to the numbering that was found by the Rabbanan. Hence, you notice Srefa, which is the first penalty, first punishment mentioned by Rabbi Shimon, indicating it's the most severe. It corresponds to what the Rabbanan held was the second in line. Hence, we have a number two over here, over Srefa. So his list is Srefa, Skila, Chenek, Vehereg. According to Rabbi Shimon's approach, being killing by the sword is a reflection of the least of offenses as far as these are concerned. Zu mitzvas haniskolin, which means up till now, in the previous parak, we were discussing the way that Skila is carried out. And it's pointed out that, Rashi points out, the reason this phrase appears is as a lead-in to the subsequent descriptions of the other misos based in. Before we continue in the Gemara, let us take advantage of our topic note and structural note, the Nosei Mivneh. We have featured Rav Schora. He opens up our Gemara, and he says, Kol Mokoim Sheshanu Chachomim Derech Minyan, any place that you find sources that teach things in a series, in a numbered fashion, Ein zu haseder me'akev. Ein zu haseder shem'akev. This, the fact that it's taught in an order with a number associated with it, the list does not indicate something that is binding in terms of that the order in the list is not binding. Chutz meha mishna de zayin samon, and with the exception of a mishnah that's found in Maseches Nida, which describes the application of seven substances that are applied to an article of clothing that have a blood stain in them. The issue there, without getting into detail, the blood mentioned over there would have ramifications regarding Tuma and Tara. The seven substances that are applied must be applied in the order that they're listed, and if the stain disappears, then the assumption that the conclusion that it was in fact dam can be reached. We can reach such a conclusion. If, however, the substances are not applied in order, then the the test, so to speak, has no legitimacy. The note continues by saying, "Hai kol mokum de Rav Schora." The general expression that Rav Schora uses in introducing the Gemara says that wherever the Chachamim teach something in an order, the order is not binding. Bo lafuke comes to exclude Hamishna b'Yevamos b'inyan Seder Chalitza. The Mishnah taught in Maseches Yevamos, which deals with the order of events that are part of the Chalitza ceremony, Shas Seder Shishon Risham. The order that's taught there is the preferable order of doing things. However, if something is switched around in the order of that particular process, it's not binding. And we should have noted that the markings will feature diamonds at the point in the Gemara that these other topics will be excluded. So we will notice if you glance at the Gemara text, about halfway down at the end of the line, there's a diamond with a 1 to the immediate right left hand side of the Gemara text. That's where the Mitzvah's Chalitza section is presented, and it's being excluded from it's being excluded by Rav Schora's comment. And the second diamond, you'll notice a bit further down at the beginning of a line, and in order to help you find it, just skim down the left-hand side of the Gemara's text till you find a diamond in number 2, and you'll see that line has what we now feature in our heading, Ulafuke, reading our note on the outside margin, Ulafuke ha-mishna b'yuma b'inyan bigdei koyen gadol. And we're going to the Rav Schora's comment serves to exclude the Mishnah in Maseches Yuma, which features the clothing of the high priest of the Kohen Gadol, Makedimo Haksonis LaMichnasayim, where the list features the Ksonis garment before the Michnasayim garment, the Ksonis being a type of robe, if you will, a garment for the upper part of the body that extended down below his midsection. And this list features the ksoines before the michnasayim garment, bisman shebefoyal hamichnasayim koydim v'seder levisha, when in fact, when it comes to dressing in these garments, the michnasayim garment, the type of pants garment, is put on first before the ksoines. So we see that even though something is taught with a number and an order associated with it, that which is taught is not, in fact, the way things actually were done. So let us turn to the Gemara. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Schora, Amar Rav Huna. Kol mokim sheshanu chachamim derech minyan. Wherever the chachamim teach something with a number and a list, ein mukdam umeuchar. There is no earlier and later. In other words, the order is not binding. Chutz mishiva samanim, with the exception of the case of the 7 substances that are featured in the following Mishnah, the Snan. Shiva samanim mavirin al hakesem. 7 substances are placed over the stain of blood as a check to determine whether it is dam. And as far as our shiur is concerned, we will just list the substances without attempting to translate them. For those who are deeply interested in translations, there are wonderful Gemara translations available, and you can research it further. The substances are roik tofel, umei grisim, umei raglayim, veneser, uboris, kamulya, veashlag. 7 substances. The katani seifa, heviron shelo kisidran. If these substances are applied on the dam, on the blood, not in this order, or they're applied at one shot, loy osa velo klum, then nothing has been accomplished in the test to determine whether it is blood or not. For our purposes, we focus on the dashed underline. Heviron shelo kisidran, lo osa velo klum. In other words, the order is binding in this particular test, in this case. But otherwise, Rav Schora wants to say, even though things are presented with a number and an order, the points are not binding. The order is not binding. So if we skip the bracketed section that you see over here, and the length of the bracketed section you can see is indicated by the dashed, dotted vertical line that appears to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You'll see ulafuke, after the brackets, you see ulafuke mi mitzvahs chalitza. That which Rav Schora said, that the other cases, the other sources, other than the blood test, other sources, the order is not binding. And that's what he's trying to exclude, is the case of ulafuke mi mitzvahs chalitza. That even though the mitzvahs chalitza source teaches the process of chalitza, the shoe removal, in the case of the avoma, that process is taught in an order. The order is not binding. So as you skim ahead in the Gemara, you can see a frame section, and a few lines after that, just skim down, and you'll notice a dashed underline. It says, V'apich les lanba. If you switch it around, Rabbi Yehuda comments, if you switch around that particular order, then it still doesn't matter. It's not binding. And if you skip down another two lines, you'll notice at the beginning of the line, U'afuke, namely that which Rav Schora says, that sources taught with an order in it. The order is not binding. Also excludes this. The issue of the Kohen Gadol. You notice a source with the first words of the source Kohen Gadol underlined, and in that source there's a dashed underline under the expression B'ksoinus B'mechnasayim. There are eight garments that are featured, and in the list of things, the first one is that's mentioned is Ksoinus, and the second one that's mentioned is the Mechnasayim. And in reality, the Mechnasayim are he dresses first. So we see, as we mentioned already, that this source involving Kohen Gadol and his clothing is a source, though it teaches, it seems to teach an order of things, the order is not as is presented in the source. Turning back to the Gemara, we left off at a point at which a bracketed section appears. We can now discuss the bracketed section, having given the introduction, as we just did, skipping down to the diamonds. Let us note the asterisk and the note where this is explained. Achrei hasugrayim, after the bracketed section, haGemara mamshicha ladun b'divrei Rav Schora. The Gemara will continue its discussion concerning Rav Schora's comment. There's a mivneh note, a structural note here, with triangles featured. Toch hasograyim, within the bracketed section, you'll notice a series of triangles. Hagemara mevia oid gimel deos. There'll be another three opinions, al mekoros shebohem nir'eh shaseidehu ma'akev, featuring sources, opinions that will introduce sources whereby it seems that the order is of significance. Namely, Rav Schora said that the only source that that has order in it, that the order is considered binding and having significance as is written, he felt that only the Mishnah in Nida had that characteristic. As we go on in the bracketed section, we're going to see some other thoughts on this matter. Continuing now in the brackets. Rav Papa Saba, we've also used triangles with Aleph, Beis, and Gimel featured to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara to give a feeling of at which point each new source is introduced. So Rav Papa Saba, Mishmei de Rav, Omar, Af Arba Misois. Our Mishnah also has this characteristic where the order is of significance. And how does Rav Papa know this? Midakom maflig Rabbi Shimon, from the fact that Rabbi Shimon presents the same items but in a different order. Shmamino davka katoni. So we see from here that the presentation of each opinion is of precision. In other words, there's a precise order to the penalties that are listed. V'idach, Rav Schora, who does not mention our Mishnah as an example of that. The reason he doesn't cite our Mishnah is because B'pluto lo komairi, he is not interested in introducing sources that are the subjects of controversy. And in our source, we have a machlokas, a controversy between the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon. Rav Papa Omar, this is another opinion, not to be confused with Rav Papa Saba. Rav Papa Omar, Af Seder Yuma. The order of the Yom Kippur ritual in the Beis HaMikdash is also of precise significance. Disnan, Kol Maisa Yom Kippurim Ho'amurim Al HaSeder. All the different avodos of Yom Kippur that are said in an order. Im Hiktim Maisa L'Chaveru Lo Asav Lo Klum. Notice we've dashed underlined the main point here. If one had a later event precede that which is stated earlier, then he has not accomplished anything. So we see from here that by switching around the order, one is in violation. Ve'idach. The other opinion that does not cite the Yom Kippur as an example says as follows, Hahu Chumra Bi'alma. Rashi explains that in the case of Yom Kippur, it is not so that the specific avodos of Yom Kippur, the specific activities of Yom Kippur, have inherent precedence and importance one over the other. The situation of Yom Kippur is simply that because of the severity of the day, the seriousness of the activity, that creates a sense of importance and need to heed the order of events. Once again, not because of the inherent significance of any given activity, but rather because it's part of the Yom Kippur day activities. That's what is meant by the Gemara, Hahu Chumra Bi'alma. Now, this is in distinction to the Arba Mises Basin, for example, which each particular item in the list, each punishment, has its inherent significance, hence it being presented before the other. Or in the case of the substances that are applied, the strength of each substance is what causes the effectiveness of that particular blood test for the blood stain on the garment. Continuing in the Gemara, Rav Huna Brei Rav Yeshua Omar Af Seder Tomid. So too, the order of activities that are needed in the offering of the daily sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash, Dekotoni Allah, the source, Tanaic source concerning the Tomid says, Zehu Seder Tomid. This is the order. That indicating that the different activities that are listed in the offering of that korban are of significance. V'idach. In this case, Rashi points out V'idach is a reference to Rav Papa. Rav Papa mentioned the order of the Yom Kippur sacrifices, the Yom Kippur activities that were performed in the Beis HaMikdash. Rav Papa himself didn't mention the Seder HaTamid. And the question is, why did Rav Papa cite Yom Kippur as an example and did not cite the Seder HaTamid? So he explains, Hahu l'mitzvah bi'alma, the Gemara says. What does that mean, Hahu l'mitzvah bi'alma? That means that as far as the Seder HaTamid is concerned, the order there is the order that's stated is the preferred order, but if it's switched around, then it still is, it's not binding. As we saw earlier, the Gemara now turns back to Rav Schora, and it's pointed out by Rashi. From time to time you notice, actually on many occasions you've noticed Rashi is sensitive to the structure of the Gemara, and without the markings one might have thought that this Ula Fuke is simply a continuation of the comment just made, and that's not the case. This Ula Fuke is a flashback to Rav Schora. So Rav Schora was trying to say that only the case of Nida you find order having significance, as opposed to what? Ula Fuke, to the exclusion of the Mitzvah Chalitza, to the exclusion of that particular case, that even though the order of events is stated in an ordered fashion, the order is not binding. Disnan. We have a Tanaic source. Let us point out ahead of time, as we did in our introduction, that the fact that the order is not binding will not be seen in the source itself, but it will be expressed by Rav Yehuda after the source. And that you can see where the dashed line expression appears several lines down from here. So we turn now to the Gemara. We said, Ula fuke mi mitzvah chalitza disnan. The source begins, mitzvah chalitza. the proper way of performing the shoe removal ceremony in the case of, in order to release the widow to be able to marry anyone she wants. Bo hu v'yavimto lifnei beis din. The surviving brother of the deceased and his sister-in-law come to the beis din, come to the court. Hoyu noistin lo etza hoganis lo. They would offer him counsel, advice. Shinemar v'koru lo ziknei iro v'dibru elov. The pasuk says they would summon him and talk to him, and it's pointed out the counsel that was given to him had to do with the fact that if he was a young man and she was an older woman, then they would advise him to pursue the chalitza method as opposed to marrying her, and likewise if there was an age discrepancy in the other direction, the same thing. Continuing in the Gemara, v'hi oimeres. What we've done in our markings is we've featured with the Aleph, with the letters, the order of events. Vehi omeres, and upon the conclusion that the couple reaches that they're not going to marry, she would say, me'ein yivami, that he refuses to marry me. Vehu omer, and then he would then say, lo chofatzti lekachto, I don't want to take her. U'b'loshon HaKadosh HaOmrim, they would say these things in Hebrew. V'niksha yavimtoi elov li'enei hazakenim. She would then draw unto him in the presence of the judges. V'cholza na'aloi, she would remove his shoe. V'yorka b'fonav, roik hanira l'dayonim. And she would spit some spit, and it has to be a quantity of spit that would be visible to the judges. V'ansa v'omra, kocho ye'osel ish, etc. V'chule v'nikro shmo b'Israel, etc. The Gemara is not printing all of the psukim that she would recite, but that's the last stage is her recitation of these verses. V'omra of Yehuda, mitzvahs chalitza. And now he says over what we saw in the source in a code or in a terse fashion. Korah. V'korei, choletzes, v'rokekes, v'korah. V'havinon ba, mai komashmolon. And we ask, what is Rav Yehuda adding by offering this code? What's he teaching me? Masnisenhi, that's a Tanaic source. Ha komashmolon. What Rav Yehuda is trying to convey to us is mitzvahi, that this is the preferred way to do things. V'apich, if however something is switched around in this process, leslon ba, it doesn't bother us, it's not binding. Tanya Nami Hachi, the further Tanaic source bears this out. Bein shehikdim chalitza l'rikika or rikika l'chalitza, whether chalitza is done, the shoe removal is done before the spinning, or the spinning done before the shoe removal. Ma she'asa asui, whatever is done is done. Ulafuke. And furthermore, Rav Schora in his original comment by saying that the substances in the blood garment test, the order there was binding. This comes to exclude the following: Ulafuke mehodisnan, kohen gadol mishamesh b'shmoina kelim v'hedyo ba'arba. The kohen gadol would do his base hamikdash service with eight articles of clothing, and the common kohen, the hedyot, with four. And we now see a list of initially four, which all kohanim had, and then an additional four that only the kohen gadol wore. And they are b'mechsoynes, b'mechosayim, b'mitznefes, v'avneit. Mosif aleim kohen gadol. The kohen gadol will add to this list of our articles of clothing. Choshen v'efoid u'me'il v'tzitz. V'tanya, and another Tanaic source commenting on this says, minayin shelo yeidover kohen l'mechosayim. From where do you know that nothing is put on before the mechosayim? In other words, the mechosayim are the first in the in the actual clothing of it, putting them on. Shinemar u'michnasei bad yu al b'saro. The mechlasayim are to be placed on his flesh, indicating there's nothing else on his flesh at the point he puts on the mechlasayim. So what do we see from here? That as far as the actual dressing is concerned, the mechlasayim are the number one. And in the as far as the tana is concerned, the ksonis was featured as number one. The Tana Maitaima Akdame Lixonis, and the Gemara asks, why do we see in the source the Ksonis being given precedence? Mishum de Akdame Kra, because in the Psukim we find the Ksonis appears first. the Rashi quotes the pasuk that the Gemara is referring to, Ksoines bad kodesh yilbash umich nesevad. It's v'chulei that in listing the clothing, the ksonis is listed first. The Gemara now asks, ukro my taimo akdame. So why did the pasuk list the ksonis first? Answer: mishum de mechasya kula gufe adifale, because it has the characteristic of covering his entire body. It was an article of clothing that served to cover his whole body. That characteristic gives it its significance. One might learn from this that there's a premium and importance placed on that article of clothing that provides the greatest level of modesty, of tzniut. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.